Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send us an email or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, the prior shows are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. You know, we often talk about what is right. We don't usually say things are wrong because that's a matter of opinion. But we talk about things that are right. And how do we know, which is the topic of our discussion today, how do we know what's right and what's wrong? Yeah, the title of it was right versus wrong, but how do we really determine that? How do we know if a suggestion, an idea, a plan is right within our context? Within the context of leading a group, a mediation, an alternative to dispute resolution, a workshop, a seminar, whatever it is that we're doing, where we have to have a process and we have to move forward to a successful conclusion. So let's start out with the right. How do we know if something is right within our context? How do we know if it's the thing to do? Now, this is interesting because I didn't think of our context particularly in this sense. But, you know, I always say this show is not scripted, and it isn't. It goes wherever we take it. Yes. And thank you all for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. A lot of people are using the word right as synonymous with moral. A lot of people say, well, it is the moral path, the moral opinion, the one that is the most moral. M-O-R-A-L, moral. So, let's take it from there. How do we judge if something is moral? Yeah. How do we know? How do we know that it's the right path, it's the moral thing to do? How do we know that? How can we judge it? A lot of people, Jaisia and others, are saying that we know it because of our cultural compass. Our cultural compass. We have been trained. We have been, well, yeah, people are saying indoctrinated. But we have been shown a way that culturally we think is morally correct. Our ethnic group, our culture, says that this would be a good thing to do and that the other paths are not as moral and therefore maybe they're wrong. Yeah, we're going to stick with the one that we think seems the most moral. Yeah. Len and others are saying that that's really a religious designation. That's really a religious concept. And to a sense that is, because a lot of religion is infused in our culture. Yeah. Well, sometimes we choose it. That's true. Excuse me. I'm going to take a sip of water. Just hold on a second. Now you know it's a live show. It's like, yes, my voice is starting to go up. It is the right path. Yeah. And so a lot of people are comparing cultural compass to religious. They are oftentimes involved with each other, right? We have an idea because our culture is generally involved with a religious thought, and that gives us a moral compass, cultural compass. You know, this is a good point, too. Anik and others are saying that it's not just, you don't judge morality because of your culture or your religion, but it's really when you do it in a comparison to other ideas and opinions, which one is the best, which one's the right, which one's the moral. Mm-hmm. Anique says it's really good comparison to other ideas and opinions, what we're talking about, and maybe what we've researched too. Because, you know, not all ideas and opinions are in our room, right, are amongst our participants. We could research what others have done. Mm-hmm. And that's a good point. Anique and Jassie and others are saying that it's a matter of also seeing what happened when they took a certain path, what others in our research, and whether or not the outcome was moral and right. Pardon me, whether it was a good, when it all came down to it and the intended act was done, did it have a good outcome? In a certain sense, right and wrong has to do with approval, right? Approval by our participants, approval about what happened, what the result was, right? Yeah. So it's kind of an approval process. Mm-hmm. So a comparison with others' ideas and opinions, and a comparison with what happened when they did whatever it was that they chose to do. Mm-hmm. So, what else has us know if it is right? Mm-hmm. What else besides moral? Mm-hmm. Well, I suppose this goes to moral too. We've gotten a lot of discussion, and thank you all for being here. And a lot of agreement, surprisingly enough, on how we judge what is moral. Presley and others are saying that you judge whether something is right as to whether it is unfair. Mm-hmm. You judge right as to whether or not it is unfair. Mm-hmm. Unfair to people in the room, to the people in the group, but also unfair to others outside of us, right? Will it have an unfair result if we take this path? Will it be unfair to someone? Will it take away their rights? Will it take away their ability to earn a living? Will it be unfair? A lot of people are saying we wish politicians would think about that. Yes, because they do. They make all kinds of rules and laws, and they seem good, I suppose, because we'll give them the benefit of the doubt and say that they did it honestly. And they were influenced by a group, right, who wanted a change, usually, or wanted a law put into place which changes whether or not something is free, whether it's legal. And they did it, but the results are unfair to someone else. Hmm. So maybe that isn't right, right? Yeah, we have to think about whether it is unfair. Yeah, and which group it is unfair to. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how else? How else do we know when something is right? This is a good point. Kyla's and others are saying that we know that it's right when it's legal, the legal path. It's the one that we can do under the law, that we won't get in trouble. And perhaps some of the other ideas and notions and opinions about what we should do might not be as definitely legal. Mm-hmm. Usually they're interpretations of the law. But sometimes something is more straightforward. It would be, well, yeah, it's a good point. There's nothing wrong with the concept that it would be the easiest. Yeah, it's the path of least resistance. There's nothing wrong with that as a way to think of what's the right path. The one that's the easiest under the law. The one that's the most straightforward. The one that'll get us there the fastest. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes we tend to look for difficulty when there is no difficulty there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes the most straightforward path is indeed the right one because the other opinions, the other suggestions, the other ideas are more colorful, maybe, but they won't get us a better result. And that's the key to it, right? If the most straightforward will get us the best and fastest result, well, gee. Yes, people are going, well, then it's right. Yeah. well, gee, it's legal under the law and is straightforward. And you know what? Maybe we should, that might be the right one. We'll talk about it, right? You know, this is an interesting point Samantha and others are making, and it's kind of dear to my heart because, of course, you all know that I happen to be an attorney, and I suppose quite a few of you are too. Yes, we have a lot of people who are attorneys listening. Excellent. And it's a good point that sometimes, depending on what country you're in, and this is, of course, a global show, and so this might not be true everywhere, but sometimes, and you know, and also everywhere there's borders and things, so I suppose this is true. Sometimes it's not legal where you are because laws are local to your country, to your area, to your... I've explained that in the United States we have lots of levels of law, right? Pardon me. We have, we've got federal, we've got state, we've got county and city and municipal. Oh, there's lots of laws. Yeah, just take my word for it. There's lots of layers. And sometimes something is not legal in your specific that you're sitting in, that you happen to be meeting in. But if you had a venue change, as Samantha and others are saying, and lawyers do this sometimes, and businesses do it all the time. If you had a venue change, you moved over not too far to the different county to across a border of some sort, it would be legal. So you might decide to change venue, to change location, to change where it is that you're headquartered so that it would be, whatever your idea is, would be easier at least and more straightforward under the law. Pardon me. In the United States, and I know other countries too, the states tax. I know the federal government taxes too, but we have lots of levels of taxing. Something about, was it Benjamin Franklin or somebody who said nothing is certain but death and taxes? He was so right, and it was long ago. So it was the federal government has a huge tax. It's an income tax. That's everywhere. But there are state taxes, and there are city taxes, and there are taxes on employers of different sorts. A head tax, for example, for on employees, a number of employees. There are, there's all kinds of taxes. There's a sales tax in a lot of states, a sales tax in a lot of counties. Mm-hmm, yeah, there's. I live in a county that has a 10% sales tax on everything I buy with the exception of food, and it has to be food that's not prepared. Food and maybe medicine. 10% is quite a bit. It adds up because over the years you buy quite a bit of stuff, right? Yeah. So people move venue. They move across the border into a neighboring state with their business, with their car, and buy things. There's malls on the edge of the borders, to states that don't have a sales tax, for example, or a much smaller one. It saves them money, right? Yeah. So it's a straightforward, right thing to do. We're going to buy a car, which is very expensive. And if we just drive over the border, which are invisible in the United States and don't have a lot of problems, and I live a place where the next state over has no sales tax, or maybe it's very low, but it's not 10%, I guarantee that, people drive over the border to malls that have been set up on the border to buy stuff. They go to Costco, big outlet store and things like that, and they buy cars and things there. And it is to change the venue so that you can get a better deal. Oh, we're getting an argument about whether that's right because you take the services in your state. I suppose it's economically right, right? That's the legal, we're talking about legal now. It's the legal path. It's certainly legal to do that. Mm-hmm. And... Well, car registration. All right, we'll go for the malls. People are talking about car registration, and you'd have to register in the state where you bought the car with the driver's license. Okay, I take back the car part. But I don't take back the part that people go across the border to buy stuff and then come back. Because you don't need to show ID. You don't need to prove you live in the state. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good point about cars. People are saying car was not true. And this is absolutely true. This is it would not work as a legal path, because in the United States we register our cars and get driver's licenses by the state, and you would be in a different state, and there would be, I don't even know if you could or not, because I don't own a car anyway. But anyway, a change of venue might be the right thing to do. It might make what you were doing legal. Yeah, it might make it better. Mm-hmm. Or it might be economically beneficial. Mm-hmm. You know, Martin and others are saying that it's nice if it's legal, and that makes it the right path. But you might be trying to change the law. Mm-hmm. That might be the thing that you're trying to overcome, is the law itself. And then, of course, that is the right path would be maybe... to fight to have a change. Yeah. So that what you were doing would become legal. Yeah. We've used marijuana as an example in the United States quite a bit, on this show quite a bit. And it is still, the law on marijuana is still in flux. Marijuana has been an illegal substance. You actually go to jail for it. For many, many, many years in the United States. And in some states now, groups fought to change the law, fought to change it. They said it was unfair because they wanted, well, originally it was for the medical marijuana people. It was an unfair law, and it prevented them from getting something that would alleviate pain and suffering and be a really boon to people's lives, right? Yeah. And some states now have a law that says that medical marijuana is legal. You can buy it in actual stores. You just walk right in, you get an approval of a doctor, and you walk in and you buy marijuana. It's a big deal thing. And some states are still illegal. You might change your venue. But you also might fight to have the law changed in your state, right? Yeah, so true, yeah. Okay. What is, and that would be the right path, right? Well, we'd be right. That would be the path that you would need to take. There'd be no other path. It would be the right one. You have no choice. You've got to try to make it legal. Mm-hmm. When else is it when it, how do we know when something is right? How else do we know when we're on the right path, when we've chosen right versus wrong? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, that's a good point Rena and others are making, that it's a lot of people are talking about this. In fact, I'm going to divide it into groups. Thank you. Thank you all for being here. Thank you very much for your participation. Well, how do we know something is right? How about when it's the only realistic option? Yeah. The only realistic option. We got no choice. This has got to be the right path because we need to. And this is the only realistic option. Yeah. The only one that we can do. Maybe the only one that we can do now. And we need to revisit and go forward again. But we can only set our goals so deep, so far in advance. And then we'll work forward. Mm-hmm. It has to be a realistic option. Mm-hmm. Now, what makes it a realistic option? A lot of people are talking about time constraints, Rena and others. You've only got so much time. Sometimes the time is set for you. You need to get something on a ballot. We just talked about changing a law, right? Yeah, and there's rules for that. And you have to work within a certain time constraint that has been created. Well, okay, by the people that made the law, I suppose. Uh-huh, yeah. They might have time constraints. The most popular one, Ezra and others are talking about, is that you only have a realistic option because you have money constraints. Mm-hmm. You've only got so much funding. Maybe your funding only lasts for a certain amount of time. Might have both time and money constraints. You're like a grant. You have to get something done within that time period. Mm-hmm. It's costing more than you thought. You have to make a realistic option. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, this is a good point, too, with the realistic option. Yasmin and others, Yasmin and Anthony and like that, say that sometimes the realistic option is the one that can be done now and work towards the future because you need a breakthrough. Nobody has the expertise yet. We're working on it. A lot of times that is true in fighting a disease like cancer, that you go forward, but what you really need, in addition to the right path and to go forward towards a cure, is you might be encouraging or funding or changing the law concerning a breakthrough in medical, a cure, or at least an alleviation. I suppose people are saying that that's what happened with the marijuana people, that it was a breakthrough in the law to allow medical marijuana because of its alleviation of pain properties. And that, see, I didn't even know this, that the marijuana that's sold in the medical areas, in the medical shops, you can breed the plants for certain good benefits, right? And for pain alleviation and like that without getting people kind of dopey. I didn't know that, but that's wonderful, actually. Yay, team. But see, that's expertise and a breakthrough in how to manufacture the plants, in how to process the product. Yeah. So that's something that's a realistic option. You need to work towards allowing that breakthrough to come. Yeah, to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now we've decided what is right. Mm-hmm. And let's talk about how we know when something is wrong. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How we've talked about how we know when something is right. We're pretty much in agreement. Mm-hmm. How do we know when something is wrong? How do we know when it's the wrong path? When it's the wrong thing to do? How do we know that one? Felicia and a lot of people are saying it's easy. Wrong is the opposite of right. And I suppose, you know, there's a good point in that, that wrong is the opposite of right. It's the other way around. We looked at what is right, and we've decided what is right, and then pretty much everything else we decided was the wrong path. Mm-hmm. Ah, good point. Sometimes you need to revisit, though, because right doesn't quite work out. You thought it was. It was a good idea at the time, but it didn't work out. It's not going there. So you might have to revisit what you thought was wrong because you didn't choose them. Yeah. Yeah, see, that's negotiation. That's going up and back with a mediation, right? Yes. We choose what we think is the right path always. We never choose what we think is the wrong path, for heaven's sakes. Given the information that we have at the time. Sometimes as we go forward, our definition of what was the right path gets changed. Uh-huh, yeah, it gets modified. We have to think about it. Right, yes. So what else makes something wrong? Winter and others are saying that really something is wrong if there's unfairness to others. Uh-huh. It would be expedient for us, but it would be really unfair to someone else, unfair to other groups, unfair perhaps to society, to, you know, to the population at large. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So unfairness to others would make a path wrong. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Michael and others are taking it one step further and saying they would be wrong to have a proposed action – that will cause harm, a proposed action that will cause harm. Yeah, that would be wrong. A proposed action that will cause harm. Yeah. Hiromi says that you have the wrong decision if it's unrealistic and impractical. It doesn't really hurt anybody. But we found a opinion and path like that, which would probably be nice, but they're kind of not capable of being brought to fruition. They are unrealistic and impractical. We see that quite a bit, of course, in groups. Sometimes someone has a wonderful idea, and we can all agree that it's a wonderful idea, that it would be great. Yeah, we are in agreement. It would be a really good thing. The problem is that it's completely undoable at the present time. I mean, we'll keep it on the table. And maybe as we push further into getting our goal achieved, and once we achieve this step in the process and have a successful outcome, maybe this unrealistic, impractical idea will become, it'll become good. Maybe that'll happen. It happens all the time. These things happen. But at the moment, we're going to have to go for something that we can do. Yeah. Because it's good to dream. Yeah. And it's good to have vision. Right. You know, people are saying that's what makes a visionary. And that's true. Hiromi and others are saying that that's, that it's not that you don't want to have a vision, that you don't want to have a vision of change, a vision of success, a vision of putting something oftentimes out. You know, it's like nowadays the ability to have all kinds of ways to hit the internet and to have wearables and like that, that's visionary how to do it. But it took steps to get there. And sometimes you have the big vision, but you can't start with the big one. You've got to make the steps towards it. Yeah. So it sometimes you need to have smaller right ones so that the big vision can become right. Make sense? Yeah. Reese is saying, and others are saying, that sometimes something is illegal, but it's really not unfair. And you need to think about why something is illegal. And you might not want to change the law. The law might be in place as a safeguard. Might be really kind of good. But you might want to have a different interpretation of what is allowed under the law. This happens a lot. A lot of times when technology and medical and like that go forward and laws are in place to protect consumers, to protect the public, because really most laws do that, and they were written a while back, and it's not so much that the law is bad, circumstances have changed, just societal circumstances have changed. So then it's not really exactly a bad law, it's not exactly unfair, but you need to have a modern interpretation, which is, in the United States, something you go to courts for. And sometimes the courts are asked to make a decision that will have impact on a law. Now, you do have to have, in the United States, you do have to have a, technically speaking, you do have to have a someone bringing the matter to the court's attention. But and then you have different groups that come in with what they call amicus brief. They state their position, especially when it gets to the very highest court. The highest court may be in your state, a federal court. Sometimes things go to the Supreme Court, which is the highest court in the land. Yeah. And the higher up you get, of course, the higher up in the process you're getting to have a new interpretation, a revision of the law. They don't really rewrite it. They just kind of interpret it differently than it was done originally. because good laws are written fairly broadly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you might have a wrong because of an interpretation, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we, of course, need to work that through. Mm-hmm. So we've talked about right, and we've talked about wrong. How do we make the determination so that we're all together on it, so that the group can go forward? Because what we personally think as leader about right and wrong, the group has to make that determination, right? Yeah. Jen says, by group discussion of all repercussions. Let's think this thing through. Group discussion of all repercussions from our actions. Mm-hmm. We've decided right from wrong. What will be the repercussions if we put this into play, if we do it? Got to think that through. I'm very big. You ever hear about the expression that the law of unintended consequences? Yeah? I think it's an Americanism, and of course this is a global show. And thank you all for being here. Thank you for your participation. The law of unintended consequences. When you haven't thought through what will the various scenarios, you got to think through what will happen. Sometimes when you think about the discussion of the repercussions, sometimes it'll have the opposite effect of what we thought it will. It's like, well, wait a minute. We thought this would be the result, but there's a really good chance that this will happen. Oops. Let's revise our thinking. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A group discussion of the repercussions. That's a real, real good idea. Mm-hmm. Toby and others are saying that what you need to do to make the determination is that you need to reach consensus about where we're going, about that this is the right path, this is the path to take. You need to reach consensus. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That this is proper. This is the right path. Mm-hmm. You know, Nobuye and others are making a very good point that when you talk about right and wrong, you don't necessarily, well, you use the word right, I think this would be the right thing to do, the right path, the right next step. But you don't accuse anyone of being wrong, right? The main thing that to do is how do we make the determination? Du Bois says, and this is a real good point, by not accusing anyone of being wrong, you're just choosing the best path. I never say you're wrong. It's insulting. Somebody has an opinion. Somebody has an idea. They have put it forward. You don't just say, well, you're wrong or be rude. My goodness, that would breach the civility rules. Yes, the civility rules say one never calls anyone an idiot. Correct. One never uses the word wrong against someone else's opinion or idea. Yeah. We're just trying to choose the best path given the circumstances as they are now, and what it is that we wish to have the circumstances be in the future. We're looking for the best path. We're looking for something better. We're not looking to make anybody be wrong. No. That would be uncivil. Yes. Yes. So we want to not accuse anyone of being wrong, but we're just choosing the best path. Right. Oh, excellent. Good. Good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But Devin and others are saying that the leader can guide the participants, but the group decides. That's it. The leader can guide the participants. We are the leader, usually. And we're usually the leader because we have expertise, right? Because we know something about the topic. Because we have an interest in it. We're the leader because we are the guide to the participants. But the group is the one that decides, not the leader. People are saying that a lot of times the group delegates the decision-making to the leader. Well, I'm going to say the famous two words that you guys say I say all the time. I'm going to say it depends. It depends because a delegation like that is kind of a dangerous tool. Because if things go great and you were indeed the best choice to make the decision because you have the most experience and understand how to do it, then fantabulous. If it's that kind of an issue, if it's that kind of a group. Yeah, it makes it easier if you could truly be the leader and have the decision-making power. We've all discussed it, but now I think we're going to go this. This is what we're going to do. I have led groups like that. They usually rely on my expertise. It makes it faster. It makes it easier. It makes it better. You have to be certain that as leader, that you can guide the participants, but the group decides. You have to make certain that the reason that you're making the decision is not because there's mayhem in the group and they just can't decide and they throw up their hands and say, you tell us, you flip the coin. That's not going to work out well. They have to designate you as leader because you are the most respected person in the room, and they respect your expertise and ability to guide, to lead. Yeah, so that's the key. It has to be the right group. I'm going to say it depends on leaders making the actual final decision. How else do we make the determination between right and wrong? So he says by seeking expert opinions and help. Yeah. Go ask somebody who's done it before. Expert opinions and help. We can't know everything in our group. If it's a chosen group, or sometimes even if not, there are different people in the group with different areas of expertise. They've been brought in special. Because sometimes there's more issues and not everybody understands all the nuances. So we've brought in some experts. We've sought some opinions. We've sought some help. Some of the people in the group are experts. You need to listen. And if the experts are disagreeing, you need to find out why. That's a good why question. Why is your result so different? Why is it there's such a big difference here? Yeah, you need to get expert opinion. And sometimes the expert opinion is very, very on opposite sides. Why would that be? Yeah. So expert opinion and help. This is a real good point, too. Kyle and others are saying that one of the ways to make a determination of right and wrong, and this would be the right thing to do, is to reach out to other groups encountering the same issues. Yeah. How will we know which is the right path and which is the wrong one? Well, let's look around. Let's see if other groups encountering the same issues have decided on a path. Deciding on something they're going to do. Maybe we'd like to join with them because there's strength in numbers. Yeah. Maybe our right path is to join with someone we agree with, some other group that we agree with. Look at what they're doing and say, you know, if we got together, we could pool resources. Yeah. Time, money, expertise. Yeah. We could pool all those things, and then we would have a better shot as a combined group. Yeah. How else do we determine right from wrong? Charles and others are saying by listening to all issues and suggestions and not just dismissing anything out of hand as wrong. And remember, we just discussed that we're not going to use the W word. We're not going to say, well, that's wrong. No, everybody's entitled. And, you know, a lot of times when someone brings an issue and a suggestion up, especially in the opening phases, in the beginning, and even sometimes towards the end, the person who made the suggestion, pardon me, upon thinking it through with the group, will see that it's not the right path. They go, oh, yeah, that's a good point. Didn't think about that. Yeah. So a lot of times people bring up suggestions that are discussed to the group and then kind of dismissed as not being practical or doable. Yeah. And most of the time, the person that brought it up agrees that, oh, that's a very good point you've made, for example. And yeah, it's just that's not going to work. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yes, this is a very good one. Zareb and others are saying that the main way to determine right from wrong is being able to admit when we are wrong, and not go stubborn about it. By being able to admit when we are wrong. Don't you think? Yes, we thought so. We thought it sincerely that this would be the right thing. But now we can see, yeah, there's something better out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And instead of going stubborn and insisting, just because it was our idea and we don't like the person that's put forward the better idea, for example, we need to be able to admit when we are wrong. Yes, 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 yes. And we don't have to actually say it out loud. We just have to be concessionary, right? Yeah, yeah. Barry and others are going back to always, how do we determine right from wrong? By always considering the unintended consequences. Yeah, you got to think it through. You got to think it through as a group. And I always say that perhaps we should sleep on it overnight. Really think about it. Really get to the bottom of, if we do this, what are the various ripples that will come out? Yeah, we'll have unintended consequences. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Maya and others are saying you need time out to stop and think through the various scenarios as hypotheticals before you take action. Yeah, right during the group. You need time outs to stop and think through the various scenarios as hypotheticals before taking action. And before we kind of get invested in the idea, right? You know, after a while, most times with groups, you know, we talked about groupthink in other shows. And by the way, other shows are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. And we've talked about groupthink and like that. And sometimes the group gets kind of invested in a path, in a scenario, yeah? And it's hard to turn around anymore. So we need to take some timeouts, right, when we're talking about something, right, in the room, and maybe some time to digest afterwards and then send out the emails and things and have a Skype meeting or call another meeting if you're close enough. We need to think through the various scenarios as hypotheticals before we take action. If we do this, what will happen? What will happen to this? Yeah? Yeah. And that is, and yes, I have saved time. A lot of times on this show, we talk through the entire hour and we don't actually get to the recipes. And people go, well, how come you didn't? So I've got at least time for at least one. We're cool. And that's why we do have the timeouts while we're in the room and while we're discussing together. It's not only because someone has breached a civility rule and we need to take them aside. No, the timeout is a moment to think, a moment to talk in smaller groups, a moment to have a bite to eat together so that we can network, so that we can get to know each other, so that we can kind of take a deep breath, right? And think about what was said, what was being done. It might be a positive thing. You might think about where we're going to go next and think about the hypotheticals. Because it's hard to think right when you're sitting there right in that moment. You have to have a moment to kind of catch your breath and consider the options is what the real idea is. Yes, and that's why we have timeouts. That's why we have breaks is what they really are. Mm-hmm. And we always advocate that you have something delicious to eat while we're having our moment to think, while we're having our break. Yeah. Not only it's really a tool. You know, it might be because you're hungry. The group is hungry. It might be dinner time. But that's not the real purpose of having the food in the room, having the potluck. The real purpose is to use it as a tool to diffuse the situation, to be able to sit down and have a think, and also to get to know each other better. Yeah, because you'll get along better if you have a working relationship. You don't have to be friends, but you do need to have a working relationship for this specific issues at this specific time. That's the key to it. Yeah. So, yes, I am going to say exactly what I always say, because it is so important. Yeah. And people go, now you're going to make your little speech. Yes, I am. I am. The little idea is that it's very important, and I know a lot of you have returned and you've heard this, but bear with me. There's a lot of new people, too. Thank you all for being here. If you're going to have food, you want to make a convivial atmosphere. So you need to take a survey. You need to take a survey about whether people have any allergies, any food prohibitions, or any religious prohibitions to food. Very important. You don't want someone to not have a good time. Mm-hmm. Then you disseminate the results of this survey. You tell everybody, because it's important for everyone to know, right? Right. And so now everybody knows about the allergies, the prohibitions, and the religious prohibitions. Mm-hmm. I also think it's very important to have people list what is in the dish. Not what it is called, meatloaf, but actually list what is in it so that I can determine if it's something I can eat. Because otherwise, I might be fooled. Mm-hmm. Remember, we want everyone to have a good time. Also, partially because I hate to run out, and I always think it's a party, I like to have some extra food. I think it's kind of the responsibility of the host. Sometimes people bring small amounts, and you know how that is. Forget. So I like to have some extra food, and I think we should have at least one safe recipe. Now, what is a safe recipe? Well, we've taken our survey, right? And we know what people can and cannot eat. And I think you should have a safe recipe within the parameters of that. A safe recipe has a list of ingredients that my people in my area would be familiar with and would have eaten before. Right? Yeah. See, in my area, we're not so familiar with curries and things. Your area may be different than mine. But the idea is that it's something we all go, oh, I can eat that. Because mm-hmm. I've eaten the ingredients before. Right? Right, yes. So, here we go. Let's start with the safe recipe. It's kind of a sweet chicken casserole. I think that sometimes it's very pleasant to have something sweet, especially if you know that a lot of people are bringing something very savory. Mm-hmm. And this has apples in it and actual sugar and like that. And it's really quite delicious. And it is very popular. I usually serve it with rice. You could serve it with pasta. You all know that if you're serving pasta, I truly think you should use the kind that are individual pieces and not the long strands just because they're so messy. Mm-hmm. And the individual pieces, you just put a slotted spoon in the bowl, the big container of pasta that's to the side. Mm-hmm. Rice goes very nice. The only thing I own that is only does one thing is a rice cooker because I use it so much. And it just sits there and it keeps it warm. Yum. Okay. Chicken and pepper and apple sweet casserole. Goody. Let's get ourselves at least a tablespoon of oil. Let's have about 3-4 pounds of boneless, skinless chicken breasts. That's not available to you. Just use boneless, skinless pieces of chicken. But we're going to cut it into chunks. Yeah, the chicken breasts around here are easy to get. They actually come prepped like that. So, you know, it's kind of like, well, yes, that would be easy. We're going to cut it into nice chunks. Mm-hmm. Let's have a nice sweet onion we're going to chop up. Mm-hmm. 4 celery stalks. If they're not very big, use more. And we're talking big ones that we're going to chop. Just kind of coarsely give them a chop. Mm-hmm. We're going to need a couple tablespoons of all-purpose flour just for a little bit of thickening. Let's have a cup and a quarter, cup and a half of apple juice. The real kind, please. Not the kind that is, I don't know, fructose and isn't really apple juice. The kind that's 100% apples. Mm-hmm. Could you use apple cider? Yes, you could. If it's alcoholic apple cider, I'm going to make that an adventure thought because some people don't want alcohol even though it cooks off. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But nice apple juice, yeah. Let's have 2/3 of a cup of chicken stock because otherwise if you use all apple juice, it's a little sweet. Mm-hmm. Let's have 2 nice cooking apples. Like a Granny Smith or something that cooks. Some of those apples really are not meant to be cooked, like the Fujis and like that. They don't cook. They get kind of shrivelly. Mm-hmm. So let's have nice 2 big cooking-type apples. If they're not big, you could use 3. And I like a Granny Smith, personally. You core them and you cube them. If you don't want the looks of the peel, peel them also. Mm-hmm. It depends how you think about it as a look. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually do peel them because I find that the peel gets kind of funny. Mm-hmm. Let's have a couple of bay leaves. Remember to pull them out at the very end, but they give it a lovely taste. I'm going to use honey. I think it goes so nicely with the apples and the chicken and like that. Ooh, yum, yum, yum. I'm going to use a whole tablespoon of honey. Mm-hmm. And then let's have 1 nice yellow pepper, yellow bell pepper, that we're going to seed and devein and get rid of the pieces and cut into chunks. Mm-hmm. How about another pepper, a sweet red pepper? Mm-hmm. And we're going to do the same. If you can't get a nice sweet red one, they've got yellow ones and there's orange ones on the market that are quite sweet in taste. I like those too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have the 2 peppers. We're going to core them and devein them and seed them and like that and cut them into chunks. Mm-hmm. Let's have 1 tablespoon of butter. We're going to melt. And let's have 2 tablespoons of sugar. Mm-hmm. I like brown sugar, personally speaking. Okay. Yum, 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 yum. You can see this is going to be sweet. Mm-hmm. Delicious. Let's see. We're going to preheat the oven to 375 just so it's there already. Then we're going to get ourselves our casserole pot. Let's do the chicken in a frying pan, and then we're going to throw it into our Dutch oven. Yeah, let's put some oil. Let's do the oil, and we're going to cook the chicken. If you cook it, you can cook it in the bottom of your Dutch oven, depending on how big a flame you've got, really, and what your Dutch oven's made out of. I'm kind of lazy, and I like to have as little pots as possible. But I do cook the chicken separate because I don't like that much oil in there. That's your decision. Okay. So I'm going to take out a skillet, and I'm going to brown the pieces of chicken on all sides, right? Because we never throw raw chicken into anything. It's not a good idea. It won't cook properly, and it will be truly disgusting. So we're going to cook the chicken, turning around, takes about 10 minutes, browned all over. We're going to use a slotted spoon because we're going to leave the oil in the bottom of the skillet, and we're going to set the chicken aside. Actually, you can already throw it into your Dutch oven, your casserole dish. Mm-hmm. Now, we've got that skillet going, right? We're going to add the onion and the celery. Still got oil in it until they get soft. Take about 5 minutes. Let's sprinkle in the flour right then and there and cook it and stir it real thoroughly. A couple of minutes. Still cooking real thoroughly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Then we're going to stir in the apple juice and the stock. I like to kind of use a whisk on that suck. You have to stir it kind of thoroughly because you don't want it to be lumpy. I do it gradually. I gradually stir in the apple juice and the stock. Then I bring it to a boil. It's all stirred together. It's not lumpy. Bring it to a boil. A little stir. Now we're going to add the cooking apples and the bay leaves and the honey. Yeah? Well, we've got the sauce, right? We've got everything in there. It's all stirred in. It's all hot. It's all cooked. What we did was we cooked the apples, right, because we boiled it. Mm-hmm. And you don't need to leave it on for the boil. No, just bring it to a boil. Then add the apples and the bay leaves and the honey. Everything's nicely brought together. Mm-hmm. You know that the chicken is sitting in the Dutch oven, the casserole dish? Pour this whole thing over the chicken. Mm-hmm. Stick it in the oven. Cook it for about 25 minutes so everything gets good and the chicken's all done. Now we're going to add the peppers. No, we haven't forgotten them. If you add them at the beginning, the peppers will go mushy and they won't look nice. They'll be kind of squishy colored things. So now we're going to add the yellow and the red, or the yellow and the orange, whichever you used, bell peppers, chunks. Put it back in the oven, 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. First, now we need to be sure that our chicken is cooked, but it is, because we've already browned it, and it's been in for about half an hour. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but just be sure. And you put the peppers in at the last minute, so to speak, about 10 minutes before. We got to remember to remove the bay leaves. That's the thing I always forget. I don't know about you guys, but I always forget to remove the bay leaves. And then somebody gets them in their plate and they have to put it aside. I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember that now. So remove the bay leaves. Mm-hmm. And there you have it. You can bring it along. It actually will stay hot for a while. You can finish it off in the oven if you've got a place that's got an oven, right? For the last 10 minutes or so, you add the peppers so that they don't go mushy. Mm-hmm. Delicious. Yes. Yes. That is why I do peel the apples, because otherwise you'll get little skin, pieces of skin that have separated from the apple, and it won't look as nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, we like to see visual. We like it to look nice. Mm-hmm. Serve it with rice. Serve it with pasta. Oh, delicious. And that is our safe recipe. Why is it our safe recipe? Because it has ingredients that most people can indeed eat. Mm-hmm. And you, of course, make the list, and my people, at least, would be familiar with all of these ingredients. Well, we've done it again. We've run out of time. And it was such a wonderful discussion. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for your participation. Yes. If you want to find us, we are at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your ideas. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.